Evidence and Answers begins right now. This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Is beauty just a matter of personal taste? Or does it reveal something deeper about reality? In God of Wonders, How Beauty Argues for a God, we explore the universal appeal of beauty found in nature, art, and music. It points to a transcendent source. If beauty stirs awe and longing within us, could it be a glimpse of the divine? The last time we were together, Pat and his guest, Lydia Kim, began part one of this interesting discussion about how beauty makes a compelling case for the existence of God. If you've missed any part of this interview, log on at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this sermon entitled, God of Wonders, How Beauty Argues for a God, and you'll find hundreds more podcasts that you may download or listen online. Now let's get right into the conclusion of this discussion.
And I know C.S. Lewis, within that quote too, he wasn't specifically talking about beauty, but he was talking about the fact that we actually have a desire for something inside of us is not just put in there coincidentally, but because there's a reason, there's a way that that desire can be filled is why we have that desire. So when we desire to live a life that's beautiful, when we desire to see a world that's beautiful, one of the best things about becoming an adult is that you get to move into your own house, you get to decorate it exactly how you want it, to your taste and what you believe, the colors and things like that, that bring a lot of, you know, pleasure to your space, the home that you live in. And I think our pursuit of wanting to live lives that are beautiful is because, like you said, it's something that we cannot truly achieve in this world. And it's points to a reality that transcends this, you know, physical manifestation too. And I think that's where we see, you know, the heart of heaven, even inside all of us through beauty, where when we imagine heaven, we imagine the most beautiful things that we can think of, the most beautiful lights, the beautiful, you know, streets and how it describes it in the Bible. And that's truly where we're longing to be and where we feel that we belong and how we were created to be as well. Even I think just as like people, when we try to look our best and when we try to find clothes that we love and we try to decorate ourselves as beautiful too, it's because that's how we were created to be. There was a longing inside of us where we wanted to be beautiful. And the fallen nature of this world is that we get people where no matter how many things that they do to their body or no matter what kind of decorations they do to their house, they just can never achieve that sense of perfect beauty. But yeah, it's to point us towards something that is truly perfectly beautiful.
Yeah, I reflect on what you said regarding the book of Revelation. I mean, our eternal dwelling is going to be incredibly beautiful. Mm-hmm. John could best describe it in metaphors or similes. You know, he says streets, you know, like gold, glass, all the precious stones there, mm-hmm. decorating the new Jerusalem, Crystal Lake, and man. So God in the eternal dwelling makes it something remarkably beautiful beyond what we could imagine. Well, what does that kind of beauty and God creating a creation with beauty tell us about God?
Yeah, I think it tells us that God is truly good and truly truthful. Like I said, I think beauty cannot be separated from truth and goodness. For something to be objectively beautiful, it needs to be true and it needs to be good. And I think the fact that we describe God as beautiful and his works as beautiful and the things that he has created within us to be beautiful, it shows you that God is not just a doing something for the sake of doing, but he cares about what he does and he cares about the way that it, not just the end result, but the process of doing. And, you know, even when it comes to like our worship and what we do as Christians, he's not satisfied with if we're just doing worship for the sake of worship or, you know, we're bringing him sacrifices just for the sake to sacrifice, but he cares about the motive and the intention behind why we do what we do. And I think it just shows that God is not just a very superficial God, but he's very intimate and he's very personable.
Yeah, and he's incredibly creative, right, and caring. And the way he designs things, not just to be functional, but inspire that within us for goodness and righteousness and excellence and joy of, he wants us to enjoy his creation. Well, how does beauty and that understanding of God and the way he works and how beauty inspires us, what are the implications of that? What are some of the implications for ministry here? You mentioned worship as one. What are some implications here?
Yeah, I think for me, actually, I really wanted to further study this topic because of something that happened in my own study group for Bible study. And basically, someone from Japan, she got married to one of our church members, and she wasn't a Christian, and she didn't really know about, Christianity or God. And so she was fairly new to the church, but we were luckily doing a series, apologetic series about the several arguments for God that we had. And one of the things that I pointed out was the argument for beauty. And I just kind of gave a very brief overview of it. And later on, when I asked her, oh, which of these arguments really, move your heart? And she said the argument for beauty really made her to see that there's something bigger and there's something more than what we see in this physical world. And I think there's a lot of great implications when it comes to the argument from beauty. I think when we're thinking about Christian media, when we're thinking about how some of the more creative ways to enter into evangelistic fields, I think there's a lot of implications there with beauty. One of the more specific examples too is that in Japan, there was a concert by a renowned organist, Masaki Suzuki, and he basically played a whole concert for the music of Bach. And listening to Bach made people consider how such beauty could exist in a world of such despair and loneliness. And actually, they were successful in having some people confess to giving their life to Jesus at the end of this concert because of this realization that they had through Bach. And it wasn't even a very direct way for them to approach, this type of topic, but the fact that beauty itself pointed people towards Jesus, I think has great implications, and especially in cultures that maybe have rejected traditional evangelical methods or common arguments. I think this is a good argument to present just because it's such a universal theme that no matter what, generation or what culture you're from, you can understand what beauty is. Yeah, I think true beauty in the end would point people towards Jesus. So this is something that more churches and more Christians should be, really pursuing in the field of media or in the field of art or wherever to really spread the gospel of Jesus.
Yeah, I think beauty's an effective argument for the existence of God. I don't think that alone will win someone a crowd, but it can be very effective. But you put that together with all the arguments for the existence of God. I mean, we have the classic three, the argument from first cause, the argument from design, the argument from the universal moral law, but you add things like the argument for beauty, the argument for, existential need, and you just add it on to these arguments. I think it's forms a very compelling case, for the existence of God. Well, Lydia, those are some compelling arguments how beauty points towards an intelligent creator, but of course there's some who would raise some objections to this. Now, what are some of the arguments against beauty pointing to the existence of a God?
Yeah, I think one of the major one is that they say, some masterpieces and some art, they incite really positive emotional responses to a lot of people, but it's clearly anti-biblical, right? Like, some of the songs that are coming out, some of the, literature. So it doesn't have the biblical truth and goodness. Does that mean that God does not have to be part of the formula for something to be beautiful? And I think that's a valid question to say, but the answer is a little bit, it's a little bit hard, I think, to argue with just beauty. Like I said, I think in order to prove that something is objectively beautiful, you have to also show why something is objectively good and objectively true. And I think that's where we could find a lot of ways to respond to this. For example, not everything that we think is anti-biblical would be anti-biblical. You have to kind of explain why that something is anti-biblical. And I think something interesting is that the Bible is clearly very beautiful. The literature is very beautiful too. But we find a lot of instances like stories that not very of that detail, not very good things, the worst sins that humanity could ever commit, and all kinds of horrible accounts are recorded in the Bible. But it's not to say that the Bible isn't beautiful, because I think the true messaging of what those instances point to is not that those sinful actions or those horrific acts are good, but it's showing how God's goodness and God's holiness is contrasted with the brokenness and the darkness of man and evil. And so that's why that thing is still considered objectively good, because the central message is that it's not those actions that are good, but the whole idea of why this is bad. And so, again, like in terms of certain art, in terms of certain literature and songs, sure, it might portray anti-biblical, scenes or whatever stories, but we have to think about what exactly the overall messaging is. Is it showing that this is a very good thing, that this is something that we should celebrate and we should see as objectively good? Or are we all in consensus that these things are objectively bad, and the fact that it's portraying something so in such truth of reality is what makes it objectively good and objectively true. And so again, this argument is a little bit hard to say in terms of a general sense, but if you bring up a specific example, I think it's easy to kind of explain from that standpoint. But also, I think another really important thing is that not all things that incite positive emotional response is beautiful. Merriam-Webster defines it that you need to experience this pleasure. And, some of these philosophers also agree that beauty has to do with the senses and what you feel. But, we're broken and fallen creatures. And so there's things like, child pornography, or there's like all kinds of horrible, horrible things that incite a lot of positive emotional response from some people. But it doesn't mean that it's beautiful, because we can't just go based off on our own subjective emotional response to question if that thing is truly good or truly beautiful. So it's a good counter, critique to what the theistic view says, but I don't think it can actually hold up if you look at some of the characteristics of what this critique is trying to say.
Well, Lydia, this is great insight that you're giving here. Maybe there's people out there who would like to read up on this. Maybe this is the first time many of them are hearing how beauty points to an intelligent creator. What are some of the sources that you found really helpful? You named some throughout this interview.
Yeah, I think, overall, it was actually pretty tough getting a lot of sources about this. And even if you go on a lot of these podcasts or any of these kind of talk shows and stuff, not a lot of people talk about this topic. So it was a little bit hard to find. But some of the major things that really helped me was obviously C.S. Lewis was very. He didn't write a whole book about beauty, but it's kind of sprinkled in a lot of his different works, one of them being Mere Christianity and the other being The Weight of Glory. And there's actually a book that is not written by C.S. Lewis, but basically a bunch of people gathered his works to talk about his philosophies about beauty. And that is called. The book is called C.S. Lewis as Philosopher, Truth, Goodness, and Beauty. And that book also helped out a lot in terms of really getting what C.S. Lewis was trying to talk about beauty. Another really helpful book was by Paul M. Gould, and he's an apologist, but he wrote a book called Cultural Apologetics, Renewing the Christian Voice, Conscience, and Imagination in a Disenchanted World. And this book really helped me a lot, because for him, it's all about how we can talk about how apologetics is so needed in a lot of our culture today, and why it is so hard for us to evangelize, because this world, the modern world, is so disenchanted. And so to be able to actually reach a lot of people through voice or conscience and imagination, you have to invoke beauty, and you have to really get into the fields of education and media. And he talked about a lot of different things, but I got a lot of the beauty part from when his chapters on imagination. There's another book called Beauty, What It Is and Why It Matters by John Mark L. Miraville. And he had a really good book about the beginning to end of why beauty is so important in a theistic worldview and some of the biblical things to support that. And so that book I really relied on a lot to talk about this as well.
Yeah, and I think Stephen Meyer, Robert Coons, I think in some of their works, maybe Stephen Meyer, The God Hypothesis, if I am correct, from a scientific point of view, talks about molecular structure, biological design, and how it's really aesthetically beautiful, and how aesthetic beauty there, even in the sciences, in creation, in like the molecular structure points to a personal, intelligent creator. So from a scientific perspective, that kind of aesthetic beauty, I think Stephen Meyer wrote a couple chapters of that in his work, and I believe others have as well. But so you get philosophers and science. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I think for me, in my research, I did focus mainly on the philosophical side of why beauty exists and how it supports the theistic argument. But like you mentioned, I think there's plenty of other really good resources out there when it comes to the biologic or the scientific reasons to where beauty exists in the created world today.
Yeah, great. You know, just off the top of my head, you know, Lydia, you've been a student in several of my apologetic classes. Why don't you tell the audience how apologetics has impacted your life and your faith in Christ and your ministry?
Yeah, I am so grateful for all the classes that I was able to take in PacRim, especially under you, Dr. Zuckerman, because apologetics really opened my eyes to seeing my faith on a whole different perspective. Where, I grew up as a PK, so my faith was a little bit automatic in a sense of the first things that I probably learned were worship songs, and the first, words that I was taught was about God. But, and so it was more of a given kind of understanding that God exists. But to be able to see through science and through history and through philosophy and through many other aspects in life, there are fingerprints of God everywhere has really elevated my faith to something that I never experienced through many years of being a Christian. I love all the retreats and all of the great things that I was able to experience as a youth growing up, as a Christian, but I really wished I had more of this kind of understanding of God through the physical world, through our history, through all of these things, more as I grew up, because I always thought that faith and, things like this should be separate and there's no way to put them together unless you're compromising one or the other. But apologetics really taught me that no, truth is on God's side. And so when it comes to history, when it comes to science, it will agree with the Bible. It would agree with who God is. And so that has really impacted me a lot, even in the way that I do my own ministry to the people that I minister to. I really emphasize that point. Something that I never heard when I was growing up is that you don't have to choose. You don't have to choose wanting to be a logical person or wanting to be, pursue truth intellectually and also to pursue faith. That's the whole point of pursuing God is that we pursue Him with every part of us, even our minds. And so that really, studying apologetics has helped me to gain a deeper and I think more firmly rooted, part of my faith inside of me, where now I'm not just standing on my own subjective personal experiences with God, but I point to very objective truths too.
Yeah, great. Great to see how apologetics helped engage your mind. You know, as Christ said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And it really engaged your mind and also helped you understand creation from a biblical, worldview perspective, how God's truth is not only communicated through his word, but through creation. That's great. And understanding that helps you not only understand God's world, but engage, you know, the non-Christian world, because as you said, now you see the fingerprints of God really in all parts of creation. Well, Lydia, I think you're in your final year. What kind of ministry do you hope to do when you graduate with your master's degree?
I'm heavily involved in youth and young adult ministries right now, so that is something that I believe that I want to do for the rest of my life, no matter how old I get. I think God has really placed a strong passion for me towards the youth, and so apologetics really helped me with that as well too, to give me a avenue of engaging the youth through apologetics. And also something that I'm really interested in, but really praying about God to establish my steps is Christian media as well. I
Yeah.
think it's enough time that Christians have stepped aside from education and from the government and from even media. And so many destructive narratives are being told in so many of these institutions. And so it's not about, oh, trying to just get whatever out there as a Christian, because I know we all know, there's some B grade type of media out there that's labeled
Yeah.
Christian, but recently, these days, there's been such a rise of, Christians really putting in the work of excellence and in beauty for their production. And one is The Chosen, that's, loved by not just Christians, but even non-Christians. Look at that show and talk about how well it's made and how well it's everything's portrayed. And it's because the creator, Dallas Jenkins, he puts so much care into how it turns out artistically as well. And so for me, I feel a lot of passion towards that, and I don't know exactly what that might look like, but I would love to be more involved in that way of really strengthening the Christian voice in, our mainstream media and in the things that especially the youth and the young adults they're consuming day in and out.
Yeah, and that's great because it's really in the youth or young adult years where you start asking the big questions of life. Why am I here? What am I going to give my life for? And if you've grown up in the church as you have, it's usually right about that time you start beginning to question your faith, right? I mean, is Christianity really true? And so I believe apologetics is essential for people working in that arena. Is that what you found?
Oh, yes, for sure. I think, especially college students, when I'm in a conversation with them about faith, it usually ends up being less about, personal experiences and more emotional type of situations. But recently I was actually at a Christian church retreat. And, normally you're in a church retreat and when you're put into small groups, you're just talking to a lot of established Christians, like Christians who grew up in the church. But actually, when they asked me to help out, I was put in charge of a group where they invited a lot of non-Christians to come to the retreat. And so when we were put into small groups, I was, talking to them about actually the creation account with them. And they started asking me questions about, oh, the Bible, who decided what would be in the Bible? And how did they, was it a bunch of guys who just got together and they said, this is it? And so I was able to take what I learned from your classes about the manuscript, about how the canon was created, and to be able to give them that information. And they've never heard anything like it before. They thought that the Bible was just something that, some random guys just put together one day and said, this is truth. So it's, I think, so essential to youth and young adult ministry, because those are the kind of questions that I was getting when I was trying to engage with them.
Yes, and so, Lydia is a great example of what Peter writes in 1 Peter 3:15, to always be prepared to give an answer, a reason, an apologia for the hope that you have, and she does it very well. Well, you've been listening to our interview with Lydia Kim. She's about to graduate from Pacific Rim Christian University with her master's and going on into the ministry here. She's been an outstanding student and we look forward to seeing how God will be using her greatly in years to come. Well, Lydia, it's been a great interview. Thanks for sharing with us on how beauty points to God, especially the God described in the Bible. So thanks for being with us here on Evidence and Answers.
Thank you so much for inviting me once again. And I'm really glad that I could share my stories and what I've learned. And I hope that that inspires somebody else to really go further into this topic and to use it for their ministry to spread the gospel. Thank you.
Our time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number there is 483-0586. Or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio free to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.